This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:35 a.m. on Tuesday, the 27th of December. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sharad Kutan and Julian Ng here with me as we take a look at the biggest business headlines of the day. Let's start with news that U.S. energy companies added oil rigs for an eighth week in a row. Analysts are seeing this as a sign of strength in the drilling recovery as crude oil prices remain near 17-month highs.
I think this is something that will scuttle OPEC's plan to prop up prices and to control oil prices. I mean, if you look at some of the drilling numbers that have come out, it's pretty staggering. They added about 207 oil rigs in the past 30 weeks. The high in the oil rigs number was way back in October 2014 when they had over 1,600 oil rigs. And then oil prices crashed down. It went to a low of just about a few oil rigs. And then it's moved up back to 207 now.
So oil rigs are those that are in production, right? So it's used as a gauge of how much oil they are drilling at the moment. So they can kind of shut down oil rigs.
Quite easily.
Don't take the oil out of the earth until prices go up again.
That's right. Okay. It's just a matter of turning on or turning off the tap. And we also have had a shale revolution over the past few years as well. And I think that this is something that the U.S. will become seen as a spoiler to the world oil market because they have so much oil. And for the first time in a very long time, they have taken away the ban for the U.S. to export oil back into the global market.
But what about the price of shale? How does it compare to crude oil?
They would have to sell at oil the
they
international
would have to.
Price.
But if production the cost of production remains higher than pumping oil out of the ground, as it were, will they be a dampener on that? I mean,
no, that's why they shut off the taps.
Yeah, so the break-even cost for shale producers can range anywhere between $35 to $75 US dollars per barrel, but on average, they fall between $50 to $60.
Yeah, sometimes they want some pocket money and some cash flows coming in. They might sell at slightly below cost. That will make them some losses, but they at least have some cash flow coming in. But just meanwhile, in China, they have made a decision to cut tariffs for renewable power because of cheaper construction costs. And this is where we are seeing another point that would challenge the status and ascendancy of crude oil pricing as well, because things like solar power and windmill power in China, the cost of those things are coming down.
Yeah,
as well.
I remember reading a lot about solar panels, China-made solar panels this year. Already, I think the cost has plunged dramatically. There's also this dispute happening with the World Trade Organization with Chinese solar panels. But I guess, you know, this is really going to be a turning point. If it's going to be cheap enough to viably switch to renewable energy, to solar energy, then perhaps that's something for the fossil fuel industry to take note of. But whether we can keep that, I mean, the battery, the storage of that energy is a whole different ballgame. Right?
Yeah, the main material for solar panels, for example, are called photovoltaic, and the Chinese government actually subsidizes this industry to the extent of about 6 billion yuan or slightly under $1 billion annually. This will allow the Chinese government to actually reduce that subsidy further and sort of divert it to more stimulus measures in other places. As we know, the Chinese government has embarked on these huge stimulus measures this year to prop up the economy.
All right. Over in India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi has quietly plugged a tax loophole used by the wealthy to buy real estate in someone else's name. So what they do is that people like politicians, businessmen and non-resident Indians, they often use cash that they haven't paid on taxes to buy property. And then they put it in the name of their relatives or their trusted employees. So there's this law called the Prohibition Benami Property Transaction Act, which came into effect on November 1st, that says people who hold assets that don't actually belong to them could face up to 7 years in jail.
Yeah, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, Benami is originated from an old Hindu law, meaning exactly that, being done or held in whatever asset.
Like a proxy.
In another person's name.
I see.
Well, how would you go about proving this? I mean, it'd be very interesting to see whether they will be able to actually prosecute somebody. It sounds like this is one of those laws where they're attempting to, put the threat of jail, of criminal action on somebody who could engage in this. Because otherwise, there might be whatever the payoff might be for being a proxy for somebody, right? And say, well, actually, there's a cost to becoming a proxy. And but how would you go on to prove
Can't you just check ownership? So, you know.
No, so ownership is legally that would be held by the proxy, right?
Right.
But they're saying that. That's
prove
just
that you don't actually live in that property or own that property.
So yeah, what would be the criteria to prove that?
Well,
in fact,
tax officials are expected to use returns from the current year as well as data from bank transactions to gather information about suspicious real estate deals.
So Sharad, if you start owning properties to the extent of tens of millions of ringgit,
without the commensurate income,
yeah,
maybe
based on what I know about you, I have reason to be suspicious about your ability to own such property, and you, me as well, the other way around as well.
He is
right?
A shady fellow, yeah. That one.
and vice versa. Thank you very much.
But I think that you raise a very good point about the challenges of trying to suss out who is cheating and who isn't. Because if you look at the property register in India, commentators put it as something that is very arcane and something that is very messy. And a lot of the assets are, for example, passed down from generation to generation without the change of the original owner's name. Like, you know, your great, great, great grandfather passing down the property to the current generation without actually changing the name. So how do you actually go out there and target the wrongdoers and separate them from the genuine transfers? But I think this is part of Narendra Modi's efforts to stamp out corruption in the country. It's a continuation of that, because we saw that demonetization initiative that took out the 500 to 1,000 rupee notes out of the system. I think this is just a declaration that he is serious about corruption in India.
I mean, what's really interesting is that clearly they know what's happening on the ground. They know how people are gaming the system, and based on that, they're enacting laws to kind of catch up with the geniuses of the world.
Because there are huge loopholes, right?
Yeah, and that's what you want governments to do, and you want regulators to do that. Always to be kind of cognizant of the games that are being, so the strategies being employed by people to game the system.
So if you contrast an emerging economy like India and that of a developed economy like the United States, right? And we know that Trump had recently appointed all these billionaires and millionaires to his cabinet and to his administration. These guys own vast amounts of wealth, and the U.S. already are very concerned about how these people would eliminate the conflict of their position in the office and their wealth. For example, the collective wealth of Mr. Trump's cabinet so far is in excess of $10 billion, excluding Trump himself. Yeah. So the kind of measures that these guys would have to take just to plug all the legal requirements, the cost of doing that will be far more than their income that they would earn as one of Trump's cabinets.
Really? You mean so the actual process of the checking their financial history, making sure that there's no conflict of interest, all that could be far, the cost of that, I can just imagine how long that process could be and how complex, given that, we're talking about five billionaires, half a dozen multimillionaires.
I mean, over the weekend, didn't we also have news that Trump's declared that he would close down the Trump Foundation? That was that was interesting, partly because of, how Trump trumpeted the fact that the foundation had done so much good. But what we do know about the Trump Foundation is that it didn't involve any of Trump's own money. He basically, got money from other from third parties and then gave it to the extent that they did, in fact, redistribute it to charitable organizations.
He did that big charitable act of having to paint a portrait of Trump himself, right? This was what Hillary Clinton raised during one of the debates. But back to this whole idea of checks and balances. The Wall Street Journal calls this whole effort of sanitizing the Trump cabinet as one of the most arduous and expensive state confirmation process in its recent political history.
I can imagine just how complex that process would be. 7:45 right now. After this, a look at the local corporate business scene. Felder defends buying Eagle High, a stake in Eagle High. We'll tell you the details after this on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.